Edmonds podcast. I'm Matt, the moderator, DeAndre, here with Alistair Weaver. How are you?
Good, thanks, Matt. Here we are again. Exciting morning. Lots of, Rivian's just had its big unveil, so more EVs hitting the market. Somebody's crashed the Cybertruck into the Beverly Hills Hotel, I see.
I saw that.
Somebody else got one stuck on a beach, so it's been an exciting day in Cybertruck land.
I thought that was you guys stuck on the beach.
No, somebody sent it to me. There's like a little dad's group where I live, and they keep sending me all this car stuff. But the Beverly Hills Hotel one was, I think they literally did stuff it into the sign of the Beverly Hills Hotel, which is quite spectacular.
I saw that and hit pretty hard, broke some stuff on that truck as well.
It's interesting, dude. Like that thing about like how much you break the truck and how much you break the hotel, given how that thing's constructed.
Yeah, I guess whoever posted the video initially blamed it on a valet driver, but it turns out that that's not the case. It wasn't a valet driver. They didn't say who, but we're assuming now it's really the owner of the vehicle or a friend of the owner. But I think what happened was is probably the friend of the owner said it was a valet or is the one who took the video and tried to say it was, you know, friend of the owner, you know.
The only thing I'd say in defense, yeah, is, and I don't know the ins and outs of the incident, is if you've never driven one, the variable ratio steering is so aggressive in that vehicle that if you literally take off then and you apply a little bit of lock, the reaction is so exaggerated to what you're mentally used to. But I still don't figure out how you'd hit the Beverly Hills Hotel sign, because that's quite a, if I remember right, that's quite a big junction. That's quite an achievement.
Yeah. Well, never underestimate the drivers we have, especially out here. We've seen some pretty amazing things out here for sure on the roads, and a lot of showing off of things. I was standing out front of, I think it was the Gaslight. It was like a little bar in Santa Monica, and some guy just jumped into his Ferrari like 430 and tried to take off. And for whatever reason, just couldn't handle it. And just immediately jumped the median and hit like a plant or a tree or whatever was in the median of the road. Everyone was standing out there. You just hear it live. You just hear things cracking and crushing. And you're just like, oh man, I just can't. It's tough to see that happen in real life. But also it's like a little bit of like, maybe you shouldn't be doing that anyway.
Yeah.
There's so much EV talk, and it's kind of getting a little tiring of all the EV stuff out there. And it's just because that's what's is being released by the car companies right now. But I haven't had a chance to get into my schedule to test drive a few vehicles. But when the schedule started opening up, like right around now, I saw it as an opportunity to grab some vehicles that I haven't necessarily had some time in, even though they might have been out for a little while. In particular, I just grabbed the Mazda CX-50. And I haven't spent much time with the Mazda vehicles, but I know this is a highly rated vehicle. I know you guys seem to really like it. And it's in a very competitive class with like CR-V and RAV4. So I wanted to get into it. And look, it's not an EV, right? Because it's not necessarily what everybody wants. I grabbed the CX-50.
Well, perversely, mate, you say it's not what everybody wants, but it's actually what everybody's buying. So you're right. We're in this and I know we're going to come on and talk about Rivian stuff, but you're right. I mean, it's like we're about to do something with the Toyota Camry, and you know, you think of it as like yesterday's car, but then you look at the sales figures. You know, Toyota's selling 300,000 a year, and there's 250,000 of the Accord sold every year, and it's easy to see why. Like they're big, they're comfortable, they just work in America, and I think this is why we're starting to see some of the recoil back from EVs as well. That you know, and sales aren't increasing at anything like the rate that a lot of the legislators were hoping it would. Because something like the CX-50 in the US right now makes a hell of a lot of sense.
It does. So I'm driving the 2.5 Turbo Premium Plus. It's their nice white, this pearl white. They call Wind Chill Pearl. And it comes in at about $45,000, so it's pretty nicely equipped. But
yeah,
you could see that, you know, the fit and finish, the trim, the, you know, the soft touch materials, the leather and stuff that's in it is done fairly well for that car without being the high end luxury brand or without being, you know, $60,000-$70,000. I think they really kind of nailed it with this car. You can see where they start to save you a little bit of money. Like you have sort of this leather trim on top of the doors in the front, but in the back, it's just plastic. They don't bring that into the back as well.
Yeah, the kids will be okay.
Yeah. So as far as you're right, like throwing food around and crayons and whatever is going on back there, it's a little bit easier to clean it up and wipe it down. But so far with this particular one with the turbo engine, I think is a fantastic car, and it's comfortable. I think the engine's a little, I don't know, like when you get on it, the engine seems a little loud. But overall, and listen, I had a run an errand and deliver, you know, 20 cases of Bravago product to a store and just loaded up the whole back of it.
I see what you did there, Matt. You just slipped a little promo in.
Well, because that's all I do now is podcasts and a beverage company. But
haven't you just done dog biscuits? Is it now Bravago dog biscuits?
We've had those for a while. They were kind of a promo piece, and we wanted to put them up on the website and make them available. But yeah, we've had them, and they're good. I sent them out to Goldberg, and he's got a whole ranch out there, and the animals eat those things. He's got a bunch of the dogs at him. But I don't know.
I'm nearly drunk all mine. I'm gonna have to pop into the warehouse.
Yeah, well, we're in between where you go to work. So on your way home, I'm surprised you're not swinging by like on your Friday way home, you know, Friday night, getting ready for the weekends.
I'll have to think about it.
What are your thoughts on the CX-50? First, explain, and then we'll get into the other stuff, but explain the difference between the CX-5 and the CX-50. Why did Mazda not replace the CX-5 ultimately and then just go to the 50? They just wanted kind of a more rugged version?
Yeah, it's a good question, because I think a lot of people, you know, we were kind of asking the same thing, because they line up very, very closely on price. I mean, they both start at around 30 grand. The CX-50 is a kind of a little bit more butch, if you like. It's a little bit squatter. The styling's a little bit more aggressive. It's one of these, it's a bit like what Honda's been trying to do as well, trying to make it look like a sort of go anywhere utility tool, less like a kind of, you know, urban. The CX-5 is kind of a good to drive, nice interior, sort of urban orientated family SUV. What always held it back was the fact that it just wasn't as big inside as something like a CRV. And so what we've always said is CX-5 is great if you want something that feels really nice inside, kind of almost like a tweener between what we regard as like mainstream and, you know, what the luxury brands are doing, but it's not as spacious. And then the CX-50 comes along, which is designed to, you know, be a little bit more, you know, a little bit more kind of, it's not off-road focused, but it's designed to look a bit butch. Even the way that they market it, it's always like sitting on some grassy moor somewhere.
And
it's
standard all-wheel drive, right? The CX-50.
Yeah.
I think that was kind of one of the differences.
Yeah. And you're right. From a kind of like product planning strategy perspective, it's a bit odd.
Yeah.
And you kind of almost imagine CX-50 comes along and CX-5, you know, quietly exits stage left. I mean, the reality is they're both good vehicles. CX-50 is probably a better all-rounder.
Yeah.
It's a nice thing. And Mazda generally is, you know, they seem to have found their little niche where they're saying, well, we're kind of a mainstream price, but we're going to give you a little bit better interior quality. We're going to think about the design, and generally they've been doing a good job, and all the way across the range. Their EVs aren't great, but you know, even going up to the, you know, the three rows and stuff, they've got some good products out there.
You know, they're starting to take these, the higher end trim levels of these vehicles. Like when you get the $45,000 version of this vehicle, and they really start to push into that sort of mid-class luxury class vehicle. Maybe it's not quite your S-Class BMW, but it certainly feels like something that Acura or Infiniti could be putting out, or Lincoln could be putting out.
Yeah, definitely. And you know, there's no, I mean, when you look at what sells generally, you know, people, although the ultimate high trims don't, you know, aren't the biggest sellers, particularly if people are leasing or financing, often people say, well, it's only like a little bit more per month and I'll get into something with a bit more luxury. And it's a bit like we were talking about last week with driving the BMW i7, you know, the democratization of technology and luxury has made, you know, the higher end vehicles harder and harder to justify, because you get into one of these, you know, the fit and finish is great. You've got Apple CarPlay, Android Auto, you've got leather, you've got ventilated seats, you've got heated seats, you've got like all the gadgets that you would expect from a luxury brand at a price which is more accessible. I mean, as you say, I think the CX-50 goes to into the early 50s, but starts at 30. So the reality, you know, the sweet spot, as you know, tends to be somewhere in the middle. I'm just having a quick look now. Yeah, I mean, it goes from 32 to 45. Your sweet spot's probably around the 40 grand mark.
But once you jump into the next category, luxury category, you're probably starting around 38 to 43-ish and work your way up. So now you're at the bottom rung. So do you want the nicest Mazda, or do you want the, you know, the stripped down, you know, I don't know, Acura or for example.
Yeah.
So
and that's also where I think brands like Genesis have done a good job of being a bit more than a Mazda, but, you know, giving you a lot for your money.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, I'm just got into it, having some fun with it, enjoying it, and wanted to get into something that wasn't particularly EV from the get-go. There's still some of those on the list, but I wanted to get into this. And plenty of power, seems like plenty of power from that turbo engine from the 2.5.
Yes, because there's two different motors, and you've got the fast one. Right. But yeah, it's just a great all rounder that has a bit more personality than something like a RAV4 or a CRV. But, you know, they are still, when you look at the sales figures, you know, this is still the heartland car of America and will be for many, many years to come.
Yeah.
I mean, Model Y might be the biggest selling car in California, but not across the nation.
And speaking of Tesla, so we kind of got into your impressions of Cybertruck a couple of weeks ago, as we got into the initial range test and kind of how that kind of broke down and versus the, you know, what Tesla was reporting versus, you know, what you guys were reporting, and then the off-road tires and how to kind of skew the numbers. And then overall, now that you guys have crunched the numbers on it, it came in better than reported, slightly better than even Tesla's claim, which is good, right? Because that hasn't really been the case in the past.
Extraordinary. Yeah.
Congratulations, Tesla.
Yes.
But one of the things you were talking about before was being able to put that truck up against the other EV trucks on the market, like the Rivian and the F-150, because let's face it, it doesn't really fit in the same category as Hummer and Silverado and Ram are still waiting for. So Rivian and F-150 are the way to go. And you guys have all of those in your fleet. You guys own all of those.
Yeah, we own an R1T, the Rivian. Yeah. We own a Lightning. So it actually comes out. Well, it's out as you're listening to this. We're recording it just before it goes live. I actually host it. So if you can stomach another 20 minutes of listening to me, then give it a watch. So we put together the Cybertruck, the Lightning, and the Rivian, all of which cost similar money. And the objective here was to literally say, like, what is this thing like as a vehicle? Because everybody else is kicking it and shooting it and doing all sorts of crazy stuff with it. It's like, well, actually, you know, if you go back to the original launch, and we show this in the video because I was there, you know, it was all about, this is going to be a serious truck that's going to, you know, revolutionize the market like the Model 3 did. It's going to take on this is going to be the new Chevy. It's going to be the new, you know, Ram. It's going to be the new Ford. And so it's like, okay, well, let's test that claim. And, you know, is there some sort of integrity behind all the, you know, all the influencers crashing it into the Beverly Hills Hotel?
Yeah. And And I mean, without giving away the whole video, because I watched the video and it's great. What are the impressions on it? Because I don't know that all three trucks are going after the same audience, but it's still a pickup truck.
It is. And what I think was surprising, because we did a whole, as you'll see in the film, we did a whole bunch of tests, like put a bunch of boxes in it, tried to do like trucky stuff. It was a borrowed vehicle. The only thing we couldn't do was put it through the test track. But we tried to look at the utility of it and like, how does this actually work as a truck? And actually it stacks up pretty well, better than maybe if you were stood at the launch 5 years ago looking at this thing than you imagine. Because once you get past all the kind of like stainless steel and the styling and everything else, what you end up with is a comfortable, high-tech, spacious truck that's really good to drive. The ride quality is superb. It feels like a lot of other Teslas, and you've got that they tune their throttle response to give you this kind of instantaneous urge, which makes them feel faster than they even are. And Rivian, for example, especially in the standard mode, has a more sort of subtle throttle response, which makes it feel slower than the Tesla, even if the reality probably is somewhat different. So, you kind of start to realize this is, Tesla knows what it's doing now. You know, they engineer the cars well. They've got good chassis guys. So it's a very stiff structure. The ride quality is really good. Handles well. You never kind of escape the fact. There's been a lot of talk. People say, it's just like a Model 3 or Model Y, which is nonsense. It's like, it's still a 6,600-pound truck on 35-inch tires. So you always know you're driving a truck. And, of course, it's massive. So, but you kind of think, well, actually, if you can live with the size and it's as wide as a Raptor, and you can live with the fact that everybody is saying, who's that guy in a Cybertruck? Then actually, it's a nice family vehicle.
I saw the as you guys know, I'm near a Tesla facility. I saw one of the flat black wrapped ones leave the building the other day, and it just had this weird kind of futuristic and interesting kind of look to it. It had a sort of a RoboCop kind of thing looking, sort of vehicle looking at it. You guys got to spend some time with it, but leading up to the production of Tesla, there's been so much talk about build quality issues, fit and finish issues, giant everything from panels not lining up to the giant windshield wiper not being able to make sense, or is it even going to cover the proper amount of area? Like just a bunch of things that maybe the initial sketch on a napkin didn't really define as they were putting that together. But after spending, I know you guys are still waiting for yours that you guys bought, but what's the initial impressions off of doing the videos and driving it for a little bit on the overall quality?
Yeah, I mean, Edmunds, as we've talked about, has owned pretty much every Tesla since the Model S, and we actually picked up our Model 3 Highland this very morning. I haven't even seen it yet, but we bought a new Model 3 Highland. And actually, the fit and finish inside, particularly of the Cybertruck, is actually really good. It feels solid. Nothing's creaking, rattling. Nothing's falling apart. We still have reservations about what the stainless steel is going to look like in 5 years' time. Everything lines up like absolutely perfectly. But the overall impression, again, was maybe better than you might think. And, it's kind of weird that we borrowed this vehicle and the owner said, please don't clean it. Yeah. It's like a bit, there's a few things like that. And maybe the future is it'll be one of these cars that everybody ends up wrapping. It's a bit like your iPhone, isn't it? You've got to end up, everybody has to have a case for it in the end.
Yeah.
So,
I mean, maybe we should just start to come standard with a wrap or something on it. Maybe we should all just, at least some sort of clear wrap or something, or some satin clear, or however they want to do it. But you're right. And you keep reading more and more things about, it's starting to get a little, some few rust spots and things like that. And Tesla's response is, yes, that's normal. I don't know if that's a reasonable response. Right.
They were arguing. I think the argument with the rust, right, was that it wasn't the car itself; it was the particles that were on the car that were rusting, which thus gave the impression of the vehicle rusting, if I remember correctly. I mean, look, it's a really interesting. Tesla's always done this thing where it's like, give it to the early adopters, let's see what happens in 6 months, and then we'll kind of like, you know, reverse engineer our way out of it. I mean, part of me still thinks, again, going back to that first event, when Musk is stood there saying, we're going to build a truck, it's going to be 40 grand, 500 mile range, you know, this is going to revolutionize the truck market. In my brain, you're thinking, okay, this is basically a Model Y in truck form. And let's face it, like, today's Teslas are sensible cars. The Model 3, the Model Y, you know, may have looked a bit exotic when they were first unveiled. Now, you know, a kind of pretty mainstream small sedan and mainstream, you know, small SUV. So to come out with the Cybertruck is extraordinary, you know, yeah, from a business decision. And it's interesting that it's not, there's almost no Tesla badge. It's like, you can see Tesla's elements, obviously you get it from Tesla and anything else, but nothing says Tesla. And it almost makes you think there would be scope for a more sensible Tesla truck to sit alongside the Cybertruck if they wanted to. Maybe that's part of the rationale, that they give themselves that little bit of separation.
And I'm curious to see what people do with it and how it gets modified in the aftermarket, because let's face it, it's going to be modified. It's definitely going to be, like, you're going to see the Cybertruck at the SEMA show, and you're going to see everything from, you know, lift kits and tank treads and all kinds of things being adapted for it. And I'm sure, even though the vehicle is selling in limited qualities, I think aftermarket companies are still going to embrace it and come up with some parts to, you know, supplement its off-road capability or camping capability or overlanding stuff and just things like that. I like to see sort of a performance version. Can you?
Well, the tri-motor, the one we had is the dual motor. They're going to do the tri. They obviously is the tri-motor as well, which is the one that we've got on order. I mean, it's kind of ridiculous. Like, honestly, the dual motor is plenty fast enough, but they're going to do the tri-motor. It's got a suspension. So yeah, if you can crack the code and start to play with that, there'll be stuff that you can,
use the air suspension and see how, you know, can you really slam it to the ground and keep it in a real low mode while you hit the track or even the drag strip with it and kind of see how it performs if you turn it into a proper sport truck.
And where does this thing land in a couple of years' time? Like, right now, if you drive a Cybertruck, it's kind of, I think you remarked, because we showed you the early version of the video, and I noticed it myself when I was watching the edit back, there's people taking pictures in the background. Yeah, so I'm driving along, sort of doing a piece to camera, talking about it, and then there's some guy with an iPhone, like, running around after me, which is kind of fun. I didn't notice at the time. It was only I was watching the footage back.
Yeah,
and, you know, that's going to die away
by
a bit, isn't it?
Yeah, I saw them drive by, and, you know, it's going to take a little while for that to die down. I mean, it'll die down a little bit, like, around town here in LA for us, but in other parts of the country, it probably won't. It'll still be interesting. But look, every time you see, you know, a crazy, you know, supercar down the road, and we get to see quite a few of them out here, we still all kind of look. And, you know, when it was a couple of years ago, I was just driving the Lamborghini Aventador and I was just sitting in traffic and it was like a school bus of kids and every window went down and every kid was taking pictures. And my thought was, why do all these kids have phones? Like, it's like, there's a lot of iPhones on that bus, but all the kids were like taking pictures and screaming and asking to rev it. And so, yes, I did all of that stuff.
That would have been me. That would have been me sort of, you know, a long time ago. I don't know. It's also like an image thing, isn't it? It's the same, to your point, it's the same as the Aventador or V8 Ferrari or something like that. You've got to be comfortable in your own skin with that image. You know, comfortable. It's, you know, it's like, do you want to be a celebrity or do you want to make such a statement about yourself? And it's hard to know in a couple of years' time where this will sit. Because at the moment, it's just bought by Kim Kardashian's got one and there's a whole bunch of LA celebs got one. You know, if you're rocking around North Carolina in 2 years' time when the fuss has died down, how many are then selling? Particularly at the price point, because it's not an accessible price point. Every electric truck is expensive, and the Rivian and the Ford are similar money, but it's still like, you know, the one we had is 100 grand. You know, the entry level one is 80. You know, will be 80 plus now. You know, it might come down a little bit if they get into, you know, some lesser versions, but it's still a ton of money. It's not 40 grand. It's not going to.
It's it's interesting vehicles like this, products like this, that allow Tesla to never spend a dime on advertising. They come out with something like this, and this is where they put their money instead of into a Super Bowl commercial. And you're right. And then everybody talks about it, and every celebrity picks one up, and every journalist wants to review it, and it works. The recipe works for them, you know.
For them, and it's interesting, it's very specific for them. And when you look at some of the challenges, I mean, Rivian's in the test. R1T is a great truck, you know, they're struggling to shift the truck. The R1S, which is the SUV version of the same thing, they are having more success with, which is bad news for them because there's less margin in the SUV than there is in the truck. But you know, Rivian's in a funny place because they've just, you know, their share price was tanking. They just cut 10% of their workforce. They lost, was it $1.5 billion in the last quarter or something? So they've lost they've been losing a lot of money, cutting their workforce. But actually, people like the product. And this morning they've unveiled the R2 and the R3, which caught everybody by surprise. So, and you know, the R1 is in our group test. And you look at it and go, well, actually, this is a nice thing. We've owned it for a year or more. You know, there's a few little teething troubles we've had with it, but it's generally been pretty good. It's a nice kind of lifestyle truck, but a load of money. There you go, the R2. And then they surprised us all. It's quite, I mean, there you go. Actually, just looking at the website, if you're on YouTube, $599 a month for a lease for an R1T for what is like a $70,000-$80,000 vehicle. It's hard to believe that there's much profit in a R1T lease. Yeah, I mean, for Rivian. At $599 a month. I mean, we've seen from the data they're losing like $30,000 a vehicle, but that's a very aggressive lease price when you think about what the unit cost of those vehicles is.
It is, but also all of these cars that get announced and they're like, this is coming out in a year, 2 years, 3 years from now. I never really believe the pricing. I just assume the pricing is kind of the gag, and then go, well, you know, inflation and this and supply chain, and by the time we got to it, it's going to be more money, and here we are, and it, you know, like it just, it's nice to think it's going to be $45,000, but I don't know why the site's not loading. I'm looking at it. I'm trying to load
I
it
think
on.
probably the site's being crashed by too many people looking at it, but. If you Google Edmunds R2, you can get our piece up, Matt. You can have a look at it. We can have a look at it there.
Yeah, I didn't
But
even know if you guys had it up yet or not.
Oh, yeah. You know, we've been working frantically. We had people at the event. The event was down in Laguna Beach this morning. We had people down there. We've had people at the office, you know, turning it all around. It's, it's another one of those where they basically come out and say, you know, here is an interesting vehicle. It's going to be priced. I mean, you've got to remember that this is a Model Y rival, and the Model Y is now 45 grand. So you can't say it's going to be a ton more money. But then it's like, oh, and it's coming in 2026. And, you know, historically, a lot of these new cars get delayed anyway. So you're a long way out. And then to reveal the R3 as well, which you weren't expecting, if you haven't seen it yet, take a look at the R3. We've also done a news piece on that. The R3 basically looks like a European hatchback. It reminds me a lot of the original Volkswagen Golf. And they'll call it an SUV, but basically it's a hatchback with big wheels. And then they are, and we, nobody was expecting this. It was like a famous kind of Apple Land finally moment. So they did the R2, which everybody knew was coming, which is a Model Y rival sitting underneath the R1. And then they said, well, basically we've got this platform. So we're also going to do this hatchback thing, which is the R3. And we're going to do both a normal version and we're going to do like a tough off-road version. There's a few people I was watching on X are sort of saying it's like the Volkswagen did a Golf, like an off-road Golf a few years ago. It feels a bit like that. There you go.
So
I mean,
now
that
we got
just
it. We
looks
got
like a 19. That's a lot like the Jaguar design Mark One Golf
Yeah, we're
from the
looking at the R3
1970s.
now.
Yeah,
And this is going to be small. Like you were testing, I think it was the little Volvo recently, the EV Volvo,
EX30, the EX30, yeah.
which you like, but you were saying it's small. And I feel like the R3 is going to fit into that category. It's going to be a small like EX30 competitor,
Yeah, they're,
although
so it's
they're going
gonna
to
it's
have
gonna
kind of this
have to.
off-road version.
So it's gonna be like somewhere in the thirty. You know, it's gonna have to be in the 30s if it's gonna compete with those cars. So again, maybe it works nice as like a second car, but it's a very expensive second car. I can't help think that like unveiling the R3 is also about Wall Street, you know, and a lot of brands have fallen into this world where, you know, Fisker came out and said, hey, not only have we got, you know, this, we've also got this, and we've got this supercar thing, and we've got a pickup truck, and we've got this and this. And, you know, we've seen this historically. Lotus tried it once where they basically said, here's every car we've got for the next 20 years. And that was disaster. And you just can't help feel that this is all about saying to Wall Street, look, we might have just shed 10% of people. We might be, you know, losing a ton of money. But hey, look what we've got coming up. And, you know, I looked this morning and the share price did bounce. So, you know,
It helped a little. We'll see how it goes. But all right. So the R3 was sort of the surprise of the day, but the R2 was the point. And what do we know about the R2? Do we have specs on?
Yeah, we seem to know a decent amount. You know, they've for a vehicle that's so far away. So basically, this is a Model Y rival or Mustang Mach-E, Hyundai Ioniq 5. Looks like a Rivian, so it looks like a scaled down version of the R1S. It's got those kind of not oblong. How do you describe the headlights? What shape is that?
I don't know. It's kind of a cylinder.
Oval headlights.
Oval shape. It kind of looks like you're supposed to put a can of Bravago in each one of those lights. And
oh, I see what you did there. With maybe some dog biscuits on the hood. I need something to plug. Keep plugging the website.
Keep plugging the website. But so the size of this is what I'm looking at outside, that Mazda CX-50.
Yes, so it's kind of Model Y big. So it's kind of like a small SUV. So think Honda CRV, that sort of thing. But you tend to probably end up having more interior space because you've got the packaging advantages of an EV. You're going to have a frunk. Interior looks a lot like the rest of the Rivians, like the R1.
Big it's central screen, looking. But
another. Yeah, I think they're doing a good job.
Looking at the press photos, I kind of hope they come out with this blue trim interior. This is a really nice, you know, blue leather interior. I'm sure it's some sort of fake vegan thing going on, but it's still pretty nice.
What's a fake vegan?
You know, like fake leather. Is that like vegan leather or whatever they're doing in here? I don't even know what they make it out of. I haven't really dug into it that much, but I don't think they're really doing a fake leather interior.
A fake vegan would be leather, wouldn't it? It's fake vegan, therefore.
Well,
it's
then that's
the
what I kind of wish it was. I wish it was a fake vegan. I don't know what is the interior made out of. If they say it's not leather,
It's like nobody really uses. Well, that's not true. People do use leather, but a lot of the time you're not sitting on cow. It's just that the synthetic leather has got a lot better. It's also like cheap real leather. You're sitting on plastic anyway because they put like so much. They just cake it in so many chemicals to make it last, and the actual leather's so thin that you basically end up sitting on plastic anyway, so you might as well sit on the real thing. I think it looks really nice. You know, I've been a fan of what Rivian's been doing. You know, we've enjoyed having a long term. There's tons of them around where I live. You know, as a company, it's hard, you know, and the problem is we're going down in the Model Y market. Yeah, you've got volume, but you know, there's also less margin because it's less expensive. They're building a new factory to build this thing. You know, I wish them luck. I really do. I think it's an exciting brand. It's shaking things up a little bit. Let's see. And then the R3, I think, is probably more geared towards Europe, where, you know, cars tend to be a little bit smaller because of the geography and the roads and everything else. But I think the R2 makes a lot of sense in America.
And honestly, you know, it looks good. It's got a kind of a sharp design to it. I know some people are kind of love or hate on what's going on with the headlights and stuff, but the back, what they did on sort of this tailgate section and the integrated like wing up on the top has quite a bit more personality than the current SUV. You know, they just gave it a little bit more character. Instead of being quite as boxy, they were able to break it up a little bit more. It's a sharp design.
It is. And I think their brand pitch is really strong as well, because, you know, like the whole overlanding scene in the US has got bigger and bigger. You know, people love a bit of Patagonia or North Face, you know, even if they never climb a mountain. And, you know, this sort of outdoorsy lifestyle vibe. It's a bit like Subaru, isn't it? And Subaru's just built a big audience of diehard fans that just keep buying more and more Subarus.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, Rivian could end up in the same place, that it's, you know, it's a nice proposition. And, you know, not everybody wants a Tesla.
That's true. Not everybody wants a Tesla.
Not everybody wants a Tesla. And GM seemed to, you know, Blazer, you know.
Yeah.
GM is struggling to build these things. I know but then you've got to remember that we're now March 24 and it's at least 2 years away. And the hard thing for them will be keeping that interest level up for the next at least 2 years before anybody drives it.
Yes. And then what sort of updates or anything are on the current models over those next 2 years, right? Do we see improvements more than, like, when, by time this starts to get delivered and they start announcing delivery, do they also announce, you know, the facelifted version or the newer version of the truck and the SUV that's already on the market?
They're going to have to. And, you know, we were talking this morning in the team. I'm going to Spain next week to drive the new Taycan.
Yeah.
And, you know, that is a bigger midlife facelift, midlife refresh than you would expect. And we talk about it, and that's partly because they've got the Macan coming out, and the Macan has got all the latest tech on it. So their flagship EV is going to be like second, you know, first generation technology, and their slightly cheaper EV is going to be like the new technology. So they've had to update the Taycan, which means if you've got a current Taycan, still a great car, but it's, you know,
yeah,
the midlife facelift is bigger than you might expect.
Well, you know, you're talking about these car companies announcing these cars, you know, 2 years in advance. But the, you know, the announcement from Dodge that we saw recently, we covered a little bit earlier this week. Goldberg and I were chatting a little bit about it, but, you know, they teased the Charger Banshee electric, you know, car. But then they hit us with a whole bunch of options this week, with a two-door and four-door and EV and gas engine. But their intention was, we're gonna keep your attention over the next 2 years by rolling out the EV, the two-door, and then the four-door, and then after that, and then the gas engine versions, and then the higher horsepower gas engine versions, and the two-door and the four. So they have this rollout plan of trying to keep your attention over the next 2 years, right? Like you're saying, like, what does Rivian do over the next 2 years to keep your attention before these new models come out? Whereas Dodge is saying, we're going to get you something pretty soon, and then we're going to give you versions of this thing, you know, faster, bigger, you know, versions of it.
Yeah, it's got basically, they seem to have thrown the proverbial kitchen sink at this car, and it's got everything apart from a V8, isn't it? It's like,
the question that came up, I don't know if you have the answer to this, but we're going to have to ask this to Dodge. We're reaching out to Dodge. Was the whole sort of story was like, we're going to come out with this electric Dodge Charger, but we're not going to homologate a version like we did with, like Ford did with the F-150, and just put electric motors in it. This is a clean sheet of paper. This is a ground up design. It's an EV platform. And then this week they hit us with a gas engine option. So I'm wondering, is the gas engine option, like, what happened to that EV platform, and how do they get a gas engine in it? Or is the gas engine car going to be somewhat based on the existing models, and then just facelifted body wise and everything else? Like, what's going to be underneath, you know, because the EV platform doesn't have a transmission tunnel, and, you know, how are they going to do that?
I can only imagine that they're doing it in the same way that, I don't know the answer, maybe I should, but in the same way that, you know, BMW does it, and I'm running around in the i5 that we talked about last week, and it's a great car. And so what they've just done is, like, let's just build a platform that we can stuff batteries into, or we can stuff an engine into. And Mercedes and Porsche and other people have said, no, that doesn't really work, it's too compromised. And BMW seem to be saying, well, actually it does. And, you know, i5s are Edmund's top rated car. It's a really nice thing. So you know, they feel like they're having the last laugh. And also, you know, particularly in this market, you know, particularly in Dodgers market, Dodgers traditional customer is not naturally predisposed to EVs, let's be honest about it. So right. It makes total sense to hedge. You know, you can have an EV version, you have a hybrid version. The EV version will probably be faster. You know, the only curious thing is that they haven't, you know, they haven't gone all in and said, let's whack the Hemi in there. I mean, there's still time.
Right. Yeah. Listen, look how many years they got out of the previous platform. So we've got like five more Fast and Furious movies for them to flex their muscles on.
It's like, why are you saying there's a new platform? Well, the old one was kind of built in the 70s or whatever it was. And,
it you know, like there's a
lot going to happen in the next couple of years politically and everything else. So having a hedge proposition, particularly if you Dodge, because let's face it, you're not the most kind, you know, you're not the most left-leaning of brands historically.
Right. I'm just...
I don't want to get into politics, but, you know.
My questions for them are, was the inline six really part of the plan from the get-go? Or was it when you released the Banshee concept, was the feedback from that car is what made you guys want to do the gas engine version as well? How far into this new platform were they before they decided it's going to have a gas engine as well? You know, that's kind of, I'm just curious. Listen, because they rolled out with the EV version, you're right. The EV version is going to be the big, bad, fast, you know, performance version. But
what they rolled out with is just a concept anyway. So, yeah. You know, this is, I actually also think it looks really good.
It does look good. Yeah. We were looking at it and it looks good. And they were saying the two-door and the four-door are the same size car and with almost the same amount of interior room. And it's really just like a door configuration that's going to be happening, you know, whatever in the B pillars.
Yeah. BMWs used to be like that in the BMW 3 series when they did the three-door or the two-door that used to be a bit like that,
which is why I'm sure we're going to go, hey, the two-door version has a lot of room in the back seat for a two-door coupe. And the four-door version has like kind of mediocre room in the back because you're thinking four-door and you want more room, but the car is bigger overall. It's longer, it's wider overall. So it's not, when you see the two-door version, it's not going to feel like a sports car per se. You're not going to park it next to a 370Z and go, hey, these are the same. It's not going to be the same.
But that was also true of the outgoing one. I mean, like I drove the Black Ghost not that long ago and it's quite an intimidating car. I mean, I'm 6'4", so I don't exactly get cower behind the wheel, but it's like a, you know, you're very conscious that this is the big unit that you can't really see the corners of.
It's a big car. Yeah, it's a big car. But anyway, I just wanted to bring that up because, I don't mind that there's an EV version of it. And I kind of like that there's a gas engine version of it as well. And I know that thing is going to be modified to the gills like every other one has in the past. So that's cool to see. I'm excited to see that.
Keeps it fun.
You know, we'll see what it looks like in person. But you know, they've got benchmarks. They've got cars they're gonna go after. You know, new Mustangs are performing well. We don't have a Camaro now. You know, so Charger's gonna have to do it. And I don't know what they're gonna do with Challenger, but apparently they're just gonna keep that name in their pocket for something special one day.
Yeah.
All right, what do you say? We're gonna wrap things up.
Deep bottom me.
No, I think we're kind of at the time limit.
Okay. No, it's all good.
What else is going on? Yeah, I mean, you're gonna head to Spain. I don't even know. Are you gonna be around next week?
No, I'm around next week, and then I'm flying. I'm actually flying via the UK to see the folks for a few days over the weekend, and then head down to Spain to drive the new Taycan. And then get back to the US, have a weekend, see the kids, and then straight to New York for the auto show. So it's going to be a busy couple of weeks. And New York Auto Show is going to be like, maybe not the peaks of what it was, but I think there's enough interest there. There's a few people coming back to it. So I think I'm going to be on the ground in Manhattan for about 36 hours and then back to LA. So
back to LA.
I'm going to be, I'm going to be feeling the jet lag for a couple of weeks, but I'm sure we keep doing the show while wherever I am in the world, we'll find a way of doing it.
We'll find a way of doing it. All right. Have a good trip. I appreciate it. And yeah, until next time, keep the air in the spare and bag in the wheel.
For the latest updates and call-in times, follow the show on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at CarCast Show. If you'd like to write in, fill out the form on CarCastShow.com. And don't forget to give us a nice rating on iTunes. CarCast is a Corolla Digital production and is produced by Chris Loxamana. For more information, visit CarCastShow.com.